ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 210 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. And if you haven't heard it yet, welcome to 2016. During this first episode of the new year, I'll be talking with the editor-in-chief of a brand new comics company that I think you should really know about, and that's Aftershock Comics. I'll be talking with Mike Martz, a name you're probably familiar with if you've recently read Batman or Guardians of the Galaxy or other franchises he's been involved with and helped make popular. We discuss the new company and how it came to be, as well as their new offerings. And they have a lot of good quality material that I think you should pick up and let your store know that you want to buy. We'll discuss them in detail together. And he talks a little bit about what we might see from them in the near future, too. So I'm sure you're going to want to listen to what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Mike Martz, the editor-in-chief at a new company, Aftershock Comics. How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk with you. As you know, I wrote a review of Replica, number one, when it came out, which I really enjoyed. So I think you guys are off to a great start. And since then, I've read two of your other books, and the ones that have come out now, and there's new ones coming out. So, man, you guys are off to a great start, I think, and I'm really looking forward to the stuff you're making. What prompted you guys to create Aftershock Comics? And, of course, you'd been working on, like, Batman and X-Men and Guardians of the Galaxy and all kinds of other franchises before. What prompted you to go to be an editor-in-chief at a different company?
You know, a few different things. I mean, primarily it was a decision I made because of the partners at Aftershock and the guys there that I would be working with. They all come from many different diverse backgrounds. We have people that were in social media, people that were in technology, computers, foreign distribution, television, film. And then there was Joe Pruitt, like myself, who had done most of his career in comic books. All these guys came from different backgrounds, but they had one common interest, and that was that they wanted to create a new company that would produce quality comic books where story would be central and the creative talent that was brought aboard would be top-notch. So, I mean, that was a message that I very much was attracted to. And the more I got to know these guys, the more I realized that this was really the next logical phase of my career and how I wanted to see my career evolve. Mm-hmm. You know, I had the great fortune of being able to work at both DC and Marvel for about 10 years at each company. I was given a lot of great opportunities and a great chance to succeed at both companies. And I look back and I'm so proud of all the work that I did there at both companies and with all the different creators. But there comes a point in anyone's career, I think, where you want to see or want to experience what that next step would be. And to me, running my own company, kind of being responsible for the creative vision of a company, that was something that was extremely attractive to me. And something that I had been thinking about for quite a long time. And then fortunately, these guys came along at the right time. They were interested in me, and we were able to make everything work together.
Well, your run on Batman, I thought, was terrific. I thought that your overseeing of that was just, you know, I think Batman is going to be building on your time for a long time to come. So I think that's great.
Well, yeah, thanks. With Batman, it was the right character, and I really had the right partners in crime to build a huge universe of story. I could not have done any of that without Scott Snyder and Grant Morrison and Tony Daniel and Paul Dini and Andy Kubert. Those guys, along with the great staff of editors that had working with me at that time, they all made that possible.
Great. Well, I'm grateful for it. I'm glad you got to be there, and you know, other properties as well, which is kind of interesting because you're moving into a phase that a lot of creators want to do. Instead of building up somebody else's property, you want to do properties that are new and become something different, start off on the ground floor. Was that kind of what attracted you to this, being able to do things that we haven't seen before?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, you said right there, starting from the ground floor and building things up. That was a huge reason why I wanted to do this. You know, anyone that works with me and knows the way I approach comic books knows that I approach things from story first. So though I've had great toys to play with in the past, you know, whether it's Batman or the X-Men or whoever, I'm attracted to creating good stories. So no matter who the toys are, no matter what the pieces are, I think we can create something brilliant and new and unique and things that other people haven't seen before. So being able to do that at Aftershock with great creators, brand new concepts, building things from the ground up, constructing a whole company worth of new ideas and product, that was a huge thing for me.
Well, it seems these days that people like to do those things more than, you know, it used to be the great thing was if you got to Batman, that was the pinnacle of your career because, you know, it was an established character that everybody knew. But these days, it seems more like folks like you, you really want to be able to develop your own properties and create new things that we haven't seen before. And frankly, I like that. I think that's a healthy thing for comics.
It is. You know, so many creators now have realized the potential of their own original ideas. And it's become a very attractive business model for many creators. I think a lot of guys and girls who come into the industry maybe are first attracted to working on the characters that they grew up reading. But there comes a time, you know, just like with myself, my editorial career, where the creators feel that urge to really create something of their own and do their own thing. And with all of the different successes that have happened over the past bunch of years, whether it's with other creator-owned companies or if it's seeing things being made into television like with Robert Kirkman or into movies like with Robert Venditti, this is something which now creators see, I can actually do this and make this happen, and it's going to happen based on the strength of my ideas. Mm-hmm. So that's a big reason why I feel many creators have been moving towards this creator-owned model.
Well, you know, you've touched on something that I was going to ask you later on, but I may as well, since you brought it, I've asked you. Do you have in your mind to see some of these Aftershock creations go on television, go on movies, advance into other media forms? Is that kind of something? Granted, the comics are probably the first and foremost thing. You can't do that if you don't have a successful comic. But if you have a successful comic, you might be able to translate into other forms like television and films and stuff. Is that something down the road you'd like to see happen?
Absolutely. I mean, that would certainly be the icing on the cake. Our primary goal is making that cake and making it as tasty as possible for the readers and the retailers and creating good quality comic books. But of course, with all of the great media product these days that was born or originated from the comics field, it would be fantastic to see some of our properties take on a second life in another media form. You know, something like Replica or Insects, I could instantly see as a television series, and I know they would do well. So certainly that would be a great success for the company and for all of our creators.
That'd be great. Now let's talk about the company for a couple minutes, because I'm really fascinated about building this company now. On your website, which is aftershockcomics.com, and I encourage people to go there if they want to learn more about you and about the books that you're doing, you have an about us sentence that reads, "Launched in April 2015, Aftershock Comics is a comic book company that combines the creative edge of an independent comic book publisher with the strengths and experience of a traditional powerhouse." And when I was looking to try and figure what differentiates you guys from other companies, that right there seems to sum it all up. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Elaborate a little on that.
Yeah, that's one of the foundations of our company and something we really pride ourselves on. Though Joe Pruitt and I have been friends for almost 20 years now, the two of us have taken different tracks in our careers in the comic book industry. Most of my career, actually all of my career up to this point, has been spent at, you know, the mainstream comic book publishers and usually in the superhero area. So my experience has been with serialized storytelling with costumes and capes and archvillains. And Joe's track was much different. His work at Caliber and his work at Desperado was really focused on working with creators to achieve their own personal vision. And no surprise, Joe found himself many times being nominated for an Eisner and succeeding in that. And so his track was much more independent based and garnering critical reviews and positive reviews, whereas a lot of people would look at what I did as more popcorn fare. Mm-hmm. With the two of us combined, we have a Rolodex that, sorry for the phrase, but really kicks ass. We have so many different people from different areas of the comic book world, and I think creators that appeal to not just the mainstream audience and the independent audience, but everything in between.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good. Now, I've got to ask you, because I ask every time I talk to people who are starting up a new company, as to the why, you know, because the thing that gets me is I hear again and again from creators, you can't possibly get rich making comics. You can't possibly make a lot of money. And so I'm convinced a lot of people do it because of the burning need to tell good stories. Is that the reason why you guys went to Aftershock? Was that the purpose? Did you think that maybe you could change the model as to how other companies do things, that you might actually be something, a very profitable part of the industry?
Yes. You know, there's a few different reasons, I think, why we did it. I mean, certainly there's the creating new things and being able to call something your own and taking a look back and saying, I did this, I created this. But, you know, the other thing that you touched upon is that there are many other companies who do a similar thing to us, but maybe not all of them started off in the same way or started off with the sole purpose or intent of doing creator-owned comics. We've been able to study those comic book companies and their business models and how they do things, and all of them do things great, and we also feel there's things that can be improved upon. So we studied those models hard, and we came up with what we felt was a very good way of doing it, and that's what we're enacting now.
Well, one of the things that you've done, and you talked about your Rolodexes and the names in there that you have, you've attracted people who are recognizable names to the company. Oftentimes I've seen new companies start out with people I don't have any idea who they are. And, you know, you take a gamble when you do those kinds of things. You buy their product and you hope it's good, and sometimes it is, not always. But with you guys, the folks that you've attracted, I am really excited about it, because you've gotten some really great storytellers involved. And I love the name of the company, by the way. I got to get it in there. I think Aftershock, like if you want to send an earthquake, an aftershock through the industry, I like the name of the company because of that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
As far as the different books come, you talked a little bit before we started to record about the fact that three of the books that this recording have come out. You've got Replica, which I wrote a review of, and you've also got other two, which I read and loved. I like Super Zero quite a lot. I thought that was a very different take on a female lead character, which I really adore. And you've got your other one, Insects, which is also female leads. You know, one of my things, anybody who listens to my podcast, I'm huge on is getting female lead characters up. And I guess that's something for yours, because two out of the three books that you've come up with so far have female leads. Was that intentional? Did you guys want to have a focus on females so maybe more women readers would pick up the books?
Well, yes and no. Of course, one of our primary goals was to be able to offer diverse product to many different audiences. So, you know, we're intentionally going out and hoping to attract different voices and people from different backgrounds, genders. But that being said, the first focus is always going to be story and always going to be creator driven in terms of our selection of creators. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times the best person for the job or the best idea for the comic is going to win out. Mm-hmm. But I think what we see now is that because we have such an influx of good talent from different backgrounds and more female creators, the offerings are becoming more balanced. And that's because we are seeing such great ideas come from a wider range of people. Mm-hmm. So we're succeeding in bringing in diverse talent and people from different areas. But I think that's more a result of that those people had the right ideas for us.
Now, I've got to ask, of course, how do you choose the comics? Do you contact the creators and say, look, we're looking for a comic, can you pitch something to us? Or is it mostly that you do, we want you to be a part of this team, and whatever you want to do, work with us and we'll make it happen? How do you get the books to come out? Because, you know, the first three have been really, you know, very different. I love different. I love variety. So I was like, wow, how did they get this happen when other companies don't quite make that happen?
Yeah, you know, it's been a different combination. And I'd like to say there's one formula that we use to get our projects going. But honestly, it's been a different combination for each of the projects. There have been certainly certain people that we knew that we wanted to work with, and we targeted them and approached them. And a lot of times, based on our past experiences with these creators or our reputations, these girls and guys wanted to work with us. Other times we were approached with an idea, and the idea was so good that we couldn't say no to it. So there's been a combination of different ways that we've initiated projects.
So do you guys take pitches? Do you prefer not to take pitches? Does it depend on the person?
It depends on a lot of different factors. I mean, you know, our website submission guidelines, you know, say that at this point in time, we're not accepting unsolicited writing submissions. And that's true. We're a company that is not concentrating on title count. We're not concentrating on market share. Mm-hmm. Those things grow in time. That's a win for us. But right now, our primary focus is on creating quality content and product that the consumer base can afford to buy and wants to buy. So that means that we are extremely selective in the projects that we launch and initiate. Mm-hmm. And many times we get some good ideas, but we need to develop them a little bit further and take it a few steps before we greenlight it. Mm-hmm. Other times we get good ideas from great creators, but they're just not right for us at that point in time. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a balancing act.
Well, I wish more companies felt the way you guys do. I'm thinking
of setting a trend.
Yeah, well, I hope so, because I'm thinking of a certain book, and I won't mention the name of it. But we get so far into it, and all of a sudden, we've got a replacement comic. I won't say what it is, but let's just say that before the story's over, we already have to have a substitute and breaks up the story in the middle of what must be a 6 or 8 issue thing. And so I get frustrated with things like that. And so with your guys' stuff, I really have a lot of enthusiasm for it because, you know, I read Replica number one, and I thought there were so many creative, enjoyable things about the book. And it even starts off with a cover. You know, it says number one on there. And of course, you know, there's several meanings going on to it, which, of course, I won't get into because it spoils a little bit on Inside the Comic.
Yeah.
But the fact is, this is issue number one, and there's all these number ones all over the place. You know, the finger number one, and all the, there's number one behind the human guy who's a peacekeeping agent. And I got such a kick out of that cover. I honestly went to my bookstore and said, I don't care how you do it. Get me the Aftershock comics because I want to see every one of them. I don't want to miss a one. And so the lady in charge got me all the ones, and luckily I got to go home and read Replica, and I wrote a review. And I just thought, you know, what a great place to start. And I've talked to Paul Jenkins before because he's done great things in the past. And clones aren't that new as far as comics go, but this book really stands out to me because you do some different things with the whole Replica idea. And that's what made me think, man, you guys are onto something, because you didn't go the standard route. You didn't go the way that we might expect you to go. You went and did something different. And I like that quite a lot.
Yeah, you know, that's the reaction we're hoping to get from all of our readers and everyone out there. Paul, his take on this book was, like you said, I mean, just very different from other clone type stories. And without giving too much away about the book, it's all Paul. And that first cover too, that was the brainchild of Paul. And I think it was just a perfect way to not only launch his series, but it was the debut book for our entire company. And it kind of says a lot there. Paul was one of the earliest creators to partner up with us, and he's been fantastic to work with since the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as Replica goes, ongoing miniseries, how's Replica going to function?
Yeah, so most of the series that we set up are intended to be regular series and ongoing, and there are a few exceptions. The only exception at this point in time is Dreaming Eagles, which is Garth Ennis's wartime drama. And that's meant to be 6 issues.
Mm-hmm. Which is going to be fun. Of course, Garth Ennis is a nice name to have on your team. Because Dreaming Eagles, I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be coming out, let's see, in fact, it's already out when this episode airs. It's out on December 30th, and so I'm looking forward to that tremendously, which looks good. I like the artwork, too. It looks really good. That's another thing. Not only do you have good writers that aren't recognized, I think your choice of artists has also been really good because it's easily understood. It's dynamic. You can tell the expressions on people's faces and tell people one from each other, which a lot of times comic book companies, when they start out, I kind of go, now, which person is that saying that? You know, and so for me, I like it when I can drop into a book and I don't hit those roadblocks. And I haven't run into that once on the 3 books you guys have put out so far. And by the time this airs, I'll have 4, which I'm looking forward to. But did you do the same thing with artists as far as writers go?
We do. You know, the selection process is a little different, even though most of these projects initiate with the writer and start with the writer. The art side of things is equally important to us. And you know, we've been very careful in the selection of the artists on each book, and we have a pretty intense casting process. You know, a lot of times it comes down to, will the art style match the story matter? Having worked on 20 years worth of mainstream comics, because it's so assembly line driven, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times, even with the best intentions, you end up selecting artists who might not be the right fit story-wise for the book. And that's always something that I look back on and I wish that we could have done a little differently. With the Aftershock and with these new comics and new projects, we have the fortune of being able to really be careful about the art selection process. And we have such a good arsenal of artists working for us, and it's a combination of veteran guys and girls who I've worked with many times in the past, like Andy Clark, and then goes to the other end of, you know, relative newcomers like Ariella Cristantina or Rafael De La Torre, who I only worked with a little bit in the past, or maybe not at all, but we saw such potential in them that we knew they would be the superstars of tomorrow.
Really cool. So that's a great way to do it. Now, before we leave Replica, I want to point out that issue number 2 will be out, according to your website, on January 6th.
Correct.
So we want to make sure. So that'll be the week after this comes out, the Wednesday after this episode here. So we'll make sure to get that. As far as, like, let's say you missed number 1 and you wanted to get number 1 of Replica, could your bookstore order that and get that? How are you going to catch up if somebody missed your first book and wanted to get it and stores wanted to order it? How would that happen?
Well, yes. I mean, this is one of the, I think, challenges that we've experienced as a new publisher. It's very important for anyone that is interested in this book to demand to their retailer that they should carry it and they should pre-order it. And of course, we are doing everything we can with our marketing abilities and to get the message out. But it's important for people to let their retailers know to carry our product. Now, of course, there's going to be a whole trade paperback program in months to come, and everything will be offered digitally very soon, and we'll have exciting announcements about that soon. But for the actual physical comic books, the most important thing is for readers to let their retailers know to pick up our product.
Now, I want to say the store that I get my stuff through, I ordered these. She got them in and she actually looked at the books before I bought them. And she just put in another order to be able to up her numbers. Instead of just getting ones for me, she wants to get them for as many people as she can in their store as well. So yeah, I think that if people will just take a chance on them and let their store see what they are, the quality they are, I think you'll find that they'll order more. So I think that's good.
Yeah, yeah. We're very much in the spirit of the quality of the books and the quality of the story will speak for themselves. That being said, it's a very tough industry and it's difficult to get people to take chances mm-hmm. on new companies and new product. And that's why it really has to be a group effort on the part of our company and retailers and readers to all try to band together and help make this new product successful.
Let's move on to insects, which of course is it's spelled differently than it sounds. It's not like insects like bugs. It's insects, INSEX, smaller case TS on it. And yeah. It's about, the way it's described is about a pair of vengeful Victorian vixens. Always avoid alliteration. Is it discover a horrifying fine power that transforms them into rich and strange new creatures?
Yeah, the sex in the title it's very intentional, and there's no hiding that it's an important part of the story. But I think that's the most important thing to focus on. What people, I think, have quickly learned after reading the first issue is that any sex that may appear in the story or be in the story is essential to the story and is not gratuitous in any way. It's actually quite an important part of the story. This was one of those projects that, like I mentioned earlier, the story came along, the idea came along, and it was too good for us to pass up. This was just Marguerite Bennett, who I worked with plenty at DC and a little bit at Marvel. You know, we knew she was someone that we wanted to work with right away. And she had pitched us 3 ideas very quickly. Each one could have been a series that we decided to move on. They were all that good. But Insects just had this je ne sais quoi, this element that, you know, it was hard to describe and it was so unique that we couldn't pass on it. Mm-hmm. And quick inside story, the original title of the series was Chrysalis. And while it certainly fit the theme of the book and was an element involved in the book, to me, it wasn't quite strong enough to really carry the title and to say what the title was about. And Marguerite offered up a whole bunch of alternates for the title. Insects was thrown in there almost as a passing joke. But once we saw it, it was too good to pass up, and we knew we had our title right there.
I like the way it's described. It says the two women descend into a world of the cultured and occult with new senses and new sensuality to forge a life for themselves and the child of their love, which, of course, makes me wonder how that's going to happen. So there's a lot of stuff I really want to see that's going to happen as this book moves forward. And the second one is due on the 13th of January, so we're looking forward to that one, too. It's a great, great book.
Yeah, I can actually say the second issue is better than the first, which a lot of people won't think is possible, but it really delivers.
Great. And the third book that came out that I really enjoyed, the Super Zero by Amanda Connor and Jeremy Palmiotti. Now, I have to say, every time I see their names on a book, I buy it. So this was a done deal even before I realized it was Aftershock. So I really liked the thing about her. And again, this is one of those female leads. And do you want to talk a little bit about the lead character? Because she's quite an interesting difference. She's very different from what I'm used to seeing in comics.
Yeah, so the main character is Drusilla Dragowski. And she is in no way a typical teenage girl. She's very different. She's a bit introverted, a daydreamer, but at the same time is very tough, very independent, and very much her own person. She's driven by something greater than herself and greater than her small town that she lives in Florida. You know, she senses that she is part of something greater, some bigger purpose, some bigger reason for being. And that's really the driving focus of the book. It's certainly a story that we may have seen told in different ways in the past, but never through the eyes of someone like Drew. Because of her unique character, she approaches things differently. And we'll learn very early on in the book that it's just not enough for her to think that becoming a hero is something she's destined for. It's actually something she needs to jumpstart and she needs to make happen as soon as possible. And the story that stems from there is humorous at times and heart-wrenching at times and takes many different twists and turns. It's a unique book. This is, I know, something that's near and dear to Jimmy and Amanda, something they've wanted to tell for a long time. And we're honored that they brought this project to us. They have such good reps in the industry and have such good relationships with other companies. They could have easily done this somewhere else, and Jimmy and Amanda chose to do it with us, and that's a real honor.
And now the second issue of this one's going to be out on January 20. So not too terribly far away. Now, you mentioned another book that should already be out, Dreaming Eagles by Garth Ennis, and this is sort of historical in nature. So I'm really fascinated by that one, too. The first one, December 30th, and then the second one, the 27th of January. This is based on a real story, right?
It is. A lot of the elements are based around the Tuskegee Airmen, the all-African-American fighter squadron that fought in World War II. Anyone that knows Garth Ennis knows that World War II is a huge area of interest to him. And unfortunately, he has a lot of stories that he likes to tell in that area. This was one of those kind of no-brainer projects. When it came to us, it was Garth plus an engaging wartime drama, plus a unique take to how he was going to tell the story. So we knew we instantly had to do this. And though it's based on real events, the main characters in the story are certainly new, and we're able to kind of examine this captivating, interesting piece of American history through a new perspective and a new point of view.
Now, there's three other books that we want to mention because they're up on your schedule so far. American Monster by Brian Azzarello, of course, who's getting a lot of attention because of Dark Knight 3 right now with Frank Miller. This one is a very different thing. It says, the ugliest side of humanity may be humanity's only hope. Do you want to talk a little bit about this book?
Yeah. So Brian, a lot of his work has been concentrated in the mainstream area the last few years, whether it's been with Dark Knight or Wonder Woman. He wanted to get back into that territory, which, you know, was more like 100 Bullets and some of his other titles in the past. And again, it was a huge honor that he chose to do this project with us. This is very much a modern day Frankenstein story. It is set in present time with very real world settings and real world characters. And we deal with the experiences of war. We deal with the experiences of the struggles of living in a small town, misunderstood, anti-hero, a lot of great complex storylines that Brian has managed to weave into this one title. You know, if readers appreciated the journey that Brian set down in books like Hellblazer or 100 Bullets, they're going to love this title too.
I noticed the covers for number one and number two tend to be the same color scheme as far as like black and white and red.
Yeah, you know, that was intentional. Juan Doe is an artist that I've worked with a lot over the years, a friend of mine for about 20 years now. We did a series of covers at Marvel back in the early 2000s called the 198. And the cover approach there was done with the same colors and was done very much propaganda style. And when we first started talking about the visual look of this book, we knew that that color scheme really worked well when we did the 198 covers back in the day. And we wanted to try to capture some of that same feel here. Though the color scheme is the same, the approach is a lot different. It's not propaganda driven. This is much more impactful and character driven. And the covers that Juan has done so far just really say so much. They say so much about the series, but at the same time, they leave the reader asking questions through the visuals, and we hope that engages people to pick up the book and see what it's about.
Well, it'll certainly stand out on a comic book stand because of the color schemes. Very different from, you know, we're used to full color, but to get like a different kind of a duotone kind of setup, black and the color red involved with it, which is the regular red. It's not a different color. Anybody who knows printing knows that there's a certain color combination that makes a bright red, and that's what you've got on the covers. And really looks interesting. Really can't wait for that. And then we've got Justin Jordan's contribution called Strayer. Do you want to talk about that one? It's coming out on January 27th.
Yeah. So Justin is another person that we knew we wanted to be in business with. We've all been fans of his creator-owned books, and I think he's been super successful in getting some great ideas out there. And not only getting great ideas out there, but he has the ability to really find fantastic new artists to work with. Juan Gedeon was a great addition to our artist arsenal. Justin brought him on board. And from the moment Justin started describing this series, we knew it was something that was up our alley. You know, this is a combination of Conan and Blade Runner, and just so many different areas of fiction are captured in this one series. One of the taglines that we've been using is that it's a story about a hero who's protecting a world he could give a crap about. And it's very much true. Strayer is a hero, but he's very indifferent about things and really could give two craps. But, you know, he finds himself caught up in a situation which is much larger than him and different than anything he's ever experienced before. But it's all told in a very fast-paced, action-based method of storytelling. So we know this is going to be a lot of fun for people.
The description on the website says the world is full of monsters. Strayer kills them, but of course, for a small fee, hey, nothing is free. And he's interacting with a girl apparently by the name of Mala who does magic of a sort, and she's the one that apparently that's involved with saving the world, and he's going to be involved with her trying to help her whether he likes it or not, according to what it says here. So this sounds like a really fascinating book too. Again, all these things are very different from what I'm used to comics doing, so I like that. It's just funny because the one we did before, the American Monster, seems like the monster is the main character, and then we get another book in which the monsters are the one being chased and killed. So I like that different perspective, even within your own quote-unquote universe.
Yeah, it's been fantastic that we've found ourselves with such different offerings in all of our titles. I mean, certainly that's part of the game plan. We want to be diverse in the type of product we offer and the different genres. And it's great that we have sci-fi, we have horror, we have action, adventure, we have crime books. And we'll see even more things launch from Aftershock as time goes on.
Now, the last one on your website, and it's one that actually may interest me the most, the ones I haven't read so far, it's called Second Sight, and it's written by David Hein, and I'm sure I'd butcher Alberto. Is it Alberto Ponticelli?
Alberto Ponticelli, yeah.
Kelly, okay.
Yeah, and both David and Alberto are creators that I've worked with a lot in the past, and people who know their work know that, I mean, these guys are true storytellers. When David sits down to write a book or a comic, he approaches it like a novel. I mean, he has the beginning, middle, end figured out as soon as he starts page one, and complex, complicated storylines that are interwoven. This is a fantastic book. This is It's a crime thriller, but with a slant that's extremely unique, and I don't want to give too much away about it, but for people that really enjoy a well-thought-out story with twists and turns and unexpected things happening, this is the type of book for them. These guys put so much tender, loving care into the story. It's so admirable.
Well, would it spoil something if I read the stuff on the website, or is that your common knowledge?
No, please.
It says Ray Pilgrim has the unique ability to see through the eyes of psychotic killers who are terrorizing London, but then he gets accused of the same crimes as the monsters he was hunting. Now, see, right there, I'm drawn in. I got to know what's going on here. I got to see what that's all about.
Yeah, Ray Pilgrim is a great character that David's created. He is, you know, more or less a private investigator who helped out the police back in the day, you know, a generation ago. And, you know, it actually became a bit of a celebrity because of the crimes that he helped solve. But then something horrible happened and it backfired, and it brought shame upon him, and he had to retreat for a lot of years. Now, current crimes, this horrible thing that's going on in London, has kind of drawn him out of retirement, and he pairs up with his daughter, who has also taken an interest in the same type of investigations and detective work. And the story goes in a few different exciting directions. It's such a good story.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's some sample pages on the website, but they're black and white. Is that pre-coloring, or is this going to be a black and white book?
It'll be a fully colored book. Okay. And yeah, at the time of the preview was put together, that was where we were at in the production stage. So yeah, it will be fully colored.
See, all these books fascinate me. I've got to get them all, because after reading the first three, I know you guys aren't going to go the beaten path. You're going to take us on different journeys that we haven't gone before, and I need that so badly after having read comics as long as I have. So I'm really looking forward to all these books. There's not a one of them that I'm going to pass on, because I just think all the concepts are really well thought out and well done.
We appreciate that, and we hope everyone else feels the same way that you do. We'd love for everyone to pick up all of our books.
Now, this is the first wave of the books you guys are going to be producing. There'll be more coming, you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. So this is really, these seven books that we've been talking about, you could consider our first wave of product. Mm-hmm. We have a few other titles that will debut over the course of the spring that you'll probably see in the next few Diamond catalogs that come out. So we're doing things one step at a time and doing things in small, concise waves.
Mm-hmm. And there's no two books that I can say are like each other, which out of this many comics, normally you're going to get, especially if you have Long John's comics, you're going to get a couple of people who sort of resemble each other. But every one of these is a very different book from the other, and I really like that. Like I say, a variety is my thing. I'm on an endless quest to find stories I haven't read before, and so the three that I've read so far are just great. And by the time this comes out, number four will be out, which I will have read by the time this posts. But man, I encourage anybody, if you have not picked up any Aftershock comics yet, this is the time to do it. Get in on the ground floor, because great storytellers telling interesting and different stories, you know, as a comics reader, this is what I'm looking for. So I can't believe how great this is going to be, and I'm really excited about it. So I am hoping that as time goes along, we will send a shockwave through the industry by telling good stories and doing things right.
That's the intent. And Wayne, your positive words, they are inspiring and makes us excited about our own product.
Well, Mike, keep it up, and I'm going to keep following you guys, and I'll be writing more reviews, because I want to help get the word out about how great your stuff is, because, man, I've loved them all. I think every one of them is just a terrific thing. If you like something a little different in comics, this is the place to go, and give this company a good chance. Anything you guys are going to be putting out, I'll be buying, so I encourage other people to do the same.
Oh, much appreciated.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for the first episode of 2016. Be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.